ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं, देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द टेंथ कैंटो चैप्टर 66। चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड Paundrika, the false Vasudev. We are reading text 1. Shri Shuka Vacha Nandavrajam Gate Rame Karushadhipatir Nrpa Vasudevoham इत्यज्ञो दूतं कृष्णाय प्राहिणोत्। श्रीशुक उवाच नन्दव्रजं गते रामे करुषाधिपतिर्नृप वासुदेवोऽहमित्यज्ञो दूतं कृष्णाय प्राहिणोत्। श्रीशुक उवाच नन्दव्रजं गते रामे करुषाधिपतिर्नृप वासुदेवोऽहमित्यज्ञो दूतं कृष्णाय प्राहिणोत्। श्रीशुक उवाच वासुदेवोऽहमित्यज्ञो दूतं कृष्णाय प्राहिणोत्। श्रीशुक उवाच नन्दव्रजं गते रामे करुषाधिपतिर्नृप वासुदेवोऽहमित्यज्ञो दूतं कृष्णाय। मातुलिस् श्रीशुक उवाच करुषाधिपतिर्नृप वासुदेव दूतं कृष्णाय प्राहिण। श्रीशुक उवाच सुखदेव गोस्वामी सेड नंद of Nanda Maharaj, Vrajam, to the cowherd village, Gate, having gone, Rame, Lord Balaram, Karushadhipati, the ruler of Karusha, Paundraka, Nripa, O King Parikshit, Vasudeva, the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, Aham, I, Iti, thus thinking, Ajna, foolish, Dutam, a messenger, Krishnaya, to Lord Krishna, Prahinot, sent. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Shukadev Goswami said, O King, while Lord Balaram was away visiting Nanda's village of Vraja, the ruler of Karusha, foolishly thinking, I am the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, sent a messenger to Lord Krishna. Purport. Since Lord Ram had gone to Nanda Vraja, Paundraka foolishly thought that Lord Krishna would be alone and therefore easy to challenge. Thus he dared to send his crazy message to the Lord. And that's the purport. So the chapter introduction also I'll read. This chapter relates how Lord Krishna went to Kashi, present-day Banaras, and killed Paundraka and Kashi Raj, and how the Lord Sudarshan Disk defeated a demon, incinerated the city of Kashi, and killed Sudakshina. While Lord Baladeva was visiting Vraja, King Paundraka of Karusha, encouraged by fools, announced that he was a real Vasudeva. Thus he challenged Lord Krishna with the following message. Since I alone am the true personality of Godhead, you should give up your false claim to this position, as well as my divine symbols, and take shelter of me. If you do not, then prepare for battle. When Ugrasen and the members of his royal assembly heard Paundraka's foolish boast, they all laughed heartily. Shri Krishna then told Paundraka's messenger to convey a message to his master. O fool, I will force you to give up the so-called Sudarshan disk and the other divine symbols of mine you have dared to assume. And when you lie down on the battlefield, you will become the shelter of dogs. Lord Krishna then went to Kashi. Paundraka, seeing the Lord preparing for battle, quickly came out of the city to confront him with his army. His friend Kashi Raj followed him, leading the rear guard. Just as the fire of universal devastation destroys every living being in all directions, so Lord Krishna annihilated the armies of Paundraka and Kashi Raj. Then, after chastising Paundraka, the Lord beheaded both him and Kashi Raj with a Sudarshan disk. Thereafter, he returned to Dwarka. Because Paundraka had constantly meditated on the Supreme Lord, even dressing like him, he gained liberation. When Krishna beheaded Kashi Raj, the king's head flew into his city, and when his queens, sons and other relatives saw it, they all began to lament. At that time, a son of Kashi Raj's named Sudakshina, wanting to avenge his father's death, began worshipping Lord Shiva with the intention of destroying his father's killer. Gratified by Sudakshina's worship, Lord Shiva offered him a choice of benedictions, and Sudakshina asked for a means to kill the one who had slain his father. Lord Shiva advised him to worship the Dakshinagni fire with black magic rituals. This Sudakshina did, with the result that a fearsome demon with a body of flames appeared from the pit of the sacrificial fire. The demon rose up, carrying a fiery trident, and at once set off for Dwarka. The residents of Lord Krishna's capital became terrified as the demon approached the city. But Lord Krishna assured them of protection and dispatched his Sudarshana Chakra to oppose the magic creation of Lord Shiva. The Sudarshana overpowered the demon and then returned to Varanasi and burned Sudakshina to ashes, together with his priests. The Sudarshan disk, following the demon, entered Varanasi and burned the entire city to the ground. Then the Lord's disk returned to his side in Dwarka. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Swapadantyam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा. So before I begin, I would like to seek the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here. So it's the beginning of a new chapter, very interesting chapter, the killing of Paundrika. Paundrika represents one of the samples, many samples that we find in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada writes how even during Krishna's presence, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present on this planet, even during that time we find people claiming to be God and showing that I am the all-powerful controller of everything. So what to speak of now when Krishna is not personally, physically present on this planet. So naturally we are bound to face so many false incarnations and gods manifesting here. So here in this purport we find, in this verse, we find how Lord Balaram, in the previous chapter we saw how Lord Balaram had visited Vrindavan, trying to pacify the gopis who were in deep separation from Krishna. So that's the time when Paundrika decides to attack, send this messenger to Dwarka. Because he was confident that if Balaram is not there, then Dwarka will be weak. Krishna may not be able to alone protect the city and the kingdom. So with that confidence, he decided to challenge Krishna by sending this messenger. And who claimed that I am that Vasudev with the four symbols of Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. And Krishna cannot claim to be the Godhead. He must return and submit all those symbols, who is falsely claiming to be Vasudev. So as we saw here, the whole assembly were had a funny time, fun time hearing this crazy message. So Balaram, if we see Balaram, Prabhupada writes extensive purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrit, in the chapter of Lord Nityananda, Panchatattva and Nityananda. And there he goes on to describe how Balaram is the original Guru Tattva, the original spiritual master, the first expansion of Krishna, and Ekaleshwara Krishna Arasava Bhritya. So Balaram is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead, and the leader of all the servants of Krishna. And Balaram, Prabhupada writes, he is Prakash Tattva, meaning Balaram brightens or dispels all the ignorance people have about Krishna. So whenever one prays to Balaram, then our ignorance is dispelled and we get a clear understanding of who Krishna is, what the tattva, original tattva of Godhead is. That's the function of Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram appears as Nityananda Prabhu when Lord Chaitanya appears. Lakshman as when Lord Ram appears. So in every incarnation his role is to assist the original person in various capacities, either as elder brother or younger brother or an assistant, in whatever ways possible. Lord Balaram assists Krishna in his various incarnations. We saw last week how in various moods and forms sometimes he acts as a separatist, in one class we heard, and tries to enhance the flavor of Krishna's pastimes and make it more and more sweet and relishable. So in that verse, tad vidhi pranipatena, tattva darshi Tattvadarshi. Balaram is in the line of Balaram, whoever guru, all the spiritual masters who come in the line of Balaram are Tattvadarshi, one who has seen the absolute truth. Only when we take shelter of such a person who has perceived the absolute truth to the full realization, then we get the knowledge of Krishna perfectly. Otherwise, if we take shelter of any other bogus incarnation, bogus guru, then we are bound to get confused, bound to get bewildered without understanding the ultimate conclusions. In the Gita, if you read the towards the end of the Gita, Sanjay also says this. Vyasa prasada chutavan etat guhyam amparam yogam yogeshwarat krishnat sakshat kathayatasvayam. So when Sanjay was there sitting besides Dhritarashtra, he could personally witness what was directly happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Vyasa prasadat, by the mercy of his spiritual master Vyasadev. Prabhupada calls it telescopic vision. Sitting here at a far distance, he could see what was happening directly in Kurukshetra. So there it's written, the mystery of the disciplic succession is that the guru is able to directly transmit to the disciple the teachings of Sri Krishna, transcending time and space, exactly as Vyasa was able to transmit the divine conversation between Arjuna and Krishna to Sanjay. So how it happens, we may not be able to understand right now, but by the mercy of Guru, by divine mercy, it is all possible. Sitting here, we can see what is happening even in the spiritual world. We have so many realized spiritual masters who could physically, they were present in this material world, but they were totally absorbed in their eternal original constitutional position and serving Radha and Krishna, serving the Supreme Lord in their original capacity. So externally they were all totally oblivious to all the material situations around them. So here we find how in Balaram's absence Paundrika is daring to attack, challenge Krishna and Dwarka. So as a guru, the guru's business is, Balaram's role is to protect Krishna. And one of Balaram's function is to protect Krishna as an elder brother in Vatsalya Ras. So only when Balaram was absent, he dared to attack Dwarka. Similarly, a guru is, guru or a bona fide spiritual master tries to defend Krishna, his mission, in various ways from the attack of atheistic philosophies, pseudo-philosophies, non-devotional, anti-religious philosophies. That's one of the main functions of a bona fide spiritual teacher. And to be a member of the disciplic succession, it's not easy. One has to, it may appear that, oh, anyway, we just have to speak and we become a guru automatically. But a real guru has, as far as knowledge of Krishna is concerned, has three primary functions. He preserves the knowledge he has received from his previous teachers, his spiritual masters, and then he transmits the knowledge to the future disciples. And another function is to expand on the knowledge. So even if you preserve as it is whatever we receive from our teachers, that itself is a great service we can render to the disciplic succession. And then if we can transmit, share the knowledge with others, then we are, that is much better service. And if you can expand and elaborate on the teachings, that is still better. Therefore we have so many acharyas writing several commentaries. On the Gita itself there are so many commentaries. In the Srimad Bhagavatam there are commentaries. And there are commentaries on the commentaries. And there is commentary on that commentary. And there is no end to it. Unlimited commentaries, and then the number of books are keeping on increasing. So Prabhupada condensed all those commentaries into one book, the Gita or the Bhagavatam. He would refer to more than a dozen commentaries at one time and take the essence of all Acharya's commentaries and present it. in a way that is understandable to our modern man. So when the guru is out of sight or out of the disciples' heart, that's when he starts experiencing trouble. So if the mission is not in our focus, if the desires of guru is not in our focus, then we lose focus in our devotional life. So Krishna personally, he doesn't take effort to defend his reputation. We see in the Mahabharata how when Yudhishthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, Shishupal went on blaspheming Krishna. And Krishna was totally unaffected. Shishupal would constantly blaspheme, and he had given that promise that if he exceeds 100 blasphemies in one sitting, then he would behead him, he would kill him. So although Shishupal would continuously criticize Krishna, Krishna never bothered to do anything to him. He was unaffected. But during the Rajasuya sacrifice, when Shishupal began, when he saw that Krishna was receiving the Agra Puja, the first worship which is generally offered to the most respectable person, Shishupal couldn't tolerate that glorification of Krishna. And he began blasphemy. So when Bhishma heard that, he started defending Krishna. Sahadeva rose up and he started cursing and countering Shishupal's arguments. Bhima rose up to almost kill Shishupal. But somehow it was controlled, because if such an auspicious event is spoiled by a battle, then the whole event is wasted. All efforts will be gone waste. So therefore somehow they tolerated, but Shishupal continued blasphemy. Finally, when Krishna saw that it is out of control, he released his Sudarshan Chakra and killed him. So usually Krishna doesn't care to protect his reputation. He is unaffected. In the 7th canto, Prabhupada writes, Narad Muni is describing to Yudhishthira how Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. So Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha blasphemed the Supreme Lord. Yudhishthira is wondering how Shishupal, when Shishupal was killed, the soul enters into Krishna's body. And Yudhishthira is surprised how such a demon could get such a supreme destination. So there Narad Muni describes to Yudhishthira how the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. He is totally unaffected by angry words, blasphemy, praise, glorification. It's unaffected. These material things don't make a difference to his person. Shishupal received the highest benefit and Krishna remained unaffected. Even during the Mahabharata war, Krishna had taken the promise that I won't take any weapon. But then when Bhishma was about to kill Arjun, when Krishna felt Bhishma is about to kill Arjun, he didn't care to break his promise, went out of the way, took up a chariot wheel and ran after Bhishma, not caring for his reputation of maintaining his word. So it is Krishna's devotee's business to try to defend Krishna's mission, his reputation. And that's the role his devotees take. So when Krishna is, when the guru is not there or his representatives are not there, it is easy to attack Krishna. Krishna doesn't care. When devotees come into action with their philosophy, with their arguments, it is our duty to protect Krishna's mission, Krishna's reputation. So, in one class, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu gave a nice analysis of who are the people in modern times who attack Krishna. So today we don't have to physically attack Krishna, although that also happens many times when people attack Krishna's deities. But the greater attack is to attack Krishna, the philosophy, devotional philosophy, and the existence of God. That kind of attack is much more subtle and destroys people's faith. Faith in the existence of God, in His devotion service. So that kind of attack happens from so many varieties of people. So in one class he explained how there are three classes of people. People with no philosophy, no religion. One who practices philosophy but no religion. And another class is the people who follow some religion without any philosophy. So people who come under the category of no philosophy, no religion are gross materialists, pure sense gratifiers. They have no philosophy, no religion. Their whole goal of life is to just enjoy sense gratification. And another people who come under this category is scientific materialists, scientists. They try to invent and discover so many objects of sense gratification. They have no philosophy, no religion. Their whole goal is to invent and enhance sense gratification. Under people who follow a philosophy but who have no religion, within this category comes a big variety of groups of people. First, we have academic scholars. They have certain philosophy. They have their principles. They have their values. But they don't believe in religion. They don't practice, profess any religion. They don't claim to follow a certain group of believers. But they have their principles. Oh, I am like this. What I think right is this. This is what I believe. And they are scholars. They have done research. Big scholars in academic institutes. Another class is Sattvaguni entertainers. Sattvaguni peace providers. In the sense, they have a philosophy, and once you practice, and they claim that if you practice this philosophy or our practices, then you will experience peace and harmony and happiness. No conception of God here. But you do some exercises, some yoga, and you feel the internal peace. So this is in the mode of goodness, and without any conception of God. And people who follow them, they do experience a certain kind of relief from their material miseries. So that is Sattvaguni peace providers. Next we have social workers. Who establish various kinds of organizations, NGOs, some for the handicapped, some for the blind, some for the hungry. So many varieties of organizations that come up with services catering to a certain class of people. So they have a philosophy. They believe in extending beyond their immediate my family, and they extend to so many other classes of people. They feel doing something good is better than just pure sense gratification. So that is based on a certain philosophy. They feel rendering service to this kind of people is the best thing we can do. And they take out time on weekends, on other days, and devote few hours of the week in doing some social activity. Then we have Mayavadis, who do not believe in God or believe that God is ultimately impersonal. And they have a philosophy. They may even refer to Vedic scriptures. And they are quite prominent. And finally we have New Age philosophers. New Age philosophers mean people who are hip and modern. It's quite attractive to the modern people. Usually modern people don't find religion as attractive, but their brand of religion can appeal to the latest, most modern human being. That is New Age philosophies. Then we have the classes, the next class, people who follow a religion, but they have no philosophy. Under this category we find a big class, Sahajiyas, the most prominent. Prabhupada often criticizes this class of people who take to religion and worship of Radha Krishna very cheaply. They follow religion, all kinds of temple worship, they even study Bhagavatam and other scriptures, but philosophically they are not sound. So these are the people who have destroyed the reputation of Vaishnavism. Then we have Sattvaguni entertainers. people who recite, like professional Bhagavatam reciters, they will recite all pastimes of the Bhagavatam continuously, nicely, poetically, with nice jokes and emotions. They will even make the audience cry. So that feeling entertains people. People are looking forward to that kind of emotional churning. So that is philosophy, that is religion. They are studying religious scriptures. But ultimately they won't hit on the core philosophy of how the material world is a miserable place, how we have to surrender to Krishna. All those things they will never touch. Then there are demigod worshippers, quite common in today's times. All kinds of demigods. Then there are semi-gods, Chaitanya Charitamrita says. Semi-gods, who claim to be God with some certain mystic powers. Then we have fanatics, outrightly rejecting everything that is not their religion. Anything that we do not follow, it's all bogus. And finally, we have hypocrites who follow religion, but they don't externally make a show of religious following, but then they are internally sense gratifiers. So all these classes of people, we find almost majority of the population fall under one of these categories. Therefore, Krishna says, Bahunam Janmanamante Gyana Vasudeva Sarmayati Samahatma Sudurlava. Such a person who has accepted Vasudeva as a Supreme Lord, all in all, that person is so rare. Samahatma Sudurlava. I'll try to elaborate slightly on people who, in modern times, how scientific theories are used to discredit the existence of God, destroy the theory of the existence of God. Dayamrita Maharaj writes in his book, Searching for Vedic India, how two main theories are there, which is used to disprove the existence of God. One is the origin of life, and the other is the origin of universe, origin of creation. So there was one scientist famed for his discovery of the DNA helix. Watson and Crick model, they say. So one scientist was Francis Crick. And he was convinced that life has originated from neurons. There is no spirit, no soul, there is no theory of consciousness. Ultimately, everything is a combination of chemicals, and the activity of the millions of neurons that are existing in the brain, that is what causes all emotions and feelings in a person. He made the statement, consciousness emerges from electrical oscillations in our neurons. You, your joys and sorrows, your memories and ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells. In other words, he is saying, you are nothing but a pack of neurons. That's it. So, the existence of soul, how consciousness emerges, the element of consciousness is non-material, has nothing to do with the atoms and molecules existing in the body. It's a big misconception people have. Ultimately, how life originates from some combination of chemicals. And somehow or other, one day we will discover that magical combination that will create life. So Prabhupada would constantly hammer with the Gita quotations, how Dehi Nosmin Yatha Dehe Kaumar. The body is constantly changing, our identity remains the same. So how can we say life originated from chemicals? Another theory, as we saw, is how the creation began. Ultimately, the universe was created by chance, and there is no ultimate supreme controller overseeing the creation. This is another big misconception people have. And one prominent scientist in this case is Stephen Hawking, a British physicist. And he wrote a famous book called A Brief History of Time. Brief History of Time. And there, he wrote, if we discover a complete theory, it should be in time understandable by everyone, not just by a few scientists. Then we shall all, philosophers, scientists and ordinary people, be able to take part in the discussion of the question of why it is that we and the universe exist. If we find the answer to this question, it would be the ultimate triumph of human reason, because we will know the mind of God. The mind of God. That's what the scientists want to know. If we know the mind of God, we can control everything and manipulate everything for our own sense gratification. So usually scientific books, they don't sell much because not everyone understands. This book became the bestseller. It sold out 2.5 million copies. That was a big, it's like any other fiction story. Usually entertainment books, romantic movie books, these are the books that sell most. Scientific books rarely go in a big number. This book sold 2.5 million. It remained the bestseller for many, many months. So Devamrita Maharaj writes how this scientist, Stephen Hawking, was the one who proposed that we will come up with a grand, grand unified theory. One theory, grand unified theory, or the theory of everything. And this will consist of one equation, one mathematical equation that will answer every natural phenomena. That will explain every natural phenomena happening in this universe. One equation. And they were in search of that. So in 1980s he predicted, 20 years ago, before ultimately he failed. So in 80s he said, within the next 20 years we'll be able to come up with that equation. And then everything will be explained by that equation. Every phenomenon, physics, chemistry, biology, everything in one equation. By 99, they felt it is too far. It's beyond our reach. Hardly we have reached anything. So Devamrita Maharaj writes, the theory of everything has now become theory of nothing. There is hardly any progress. So he quotes a joke. He says, never run after a bus, a woman and a scientific theory. Because there will always be another one in a few minutes. All these things keep changing. Every now and then. I saw a video where one Bible scholar, he is defending the theory of creation. And he strongly condemns the Darwinian theory of evolution. He gives 100 reasons why theory of evolution is stupid. And there he quotes how the scientists keep changing their theories. So he says, initially, scientists said, the mass that exploded, the Big Bang theory, the mass that exploded was few light years in diameter. So assuming, give fair conservative, at least it was 2 light years in diameter, which means approximately 12 trillion miles. This is the diameter of the mass that exploded and created so many universes. Then in 1965 they said, no, it is not 12 trillion miles. It is 275 million miles. They revised the data. Conclusion. Then they said, no, it is not 275 million. We have revised and discovered much more. It is, in 1972 they said, it is 71 million miles. And after 2 years they said, no, it is not so much. It is 54,000 miles. So this guy is trying to say how the scientists are ridiculous. Finally, in 1983 the scientists are saying, the mass that exploded is a trillionth the diameter of a proton. So from trillions of miles to this, how the theory is getting updated and renewed all the time. How can we trust them? That's the point he's raising. And finally they say nothing exploded. Nothing exploded. So the whole universe came from nothing, and then we have this entire solar system and planets and galaxies. All came from nothing. So he is saying, he is challenging the scientists. He says, your theory says that everything came from nothing. My theory says everything came from God. Just because your theory says everything came from nothing, that doesn't mean your theory is scientific and my theory is religious. We both are religious. Your theory is believing in nothing and I believe in God. And then he goes on with various other arguments, how ultimately the theory of evolution is stupid. So Prabhupada used to constantly hammer this point. In one conversation, not exactly his conversation, but he would give this argument how if the scientists are so intelligent, why can't they produce a chicken out of mixing chemicals? And there was this famous debate between Hamsadutta Swami and Dr. Abraham Kuvur. This debate used to appear in that Life Comes From Life, but now it is not there nowadays. So there it says, so Hamsadutta Swami, Prabhupada disciple, he debates with this famous atheist scientist from Sri Lanka, Abraham Kuvur, and then he challenges him, if you have the ability and the scientific knowledge, why can't you just mix the chemicals and create a chicken? If you cannot do, the chicken is a better scientist than you. So in reply to that argument, Kuvur replies by saying, probably Swami doesn't know that we have created so many elements, 10 elements like fermium and this and that, so many other elements. And he doesn't directly answer this question of why I can't create chicken or by mixing chemical. He says scientists have discovered so many other things. So again he comes on to hammer the same point. I am asking you, why can't you create chicken out of chemicals? So there he concludes by saying how scientists are trying to discredit God and trying to cover the faith, destroy people's faith in the existence of God. So he says, scientists like to discredit the Vedas by saying that they are the writings of superstitious aborigines. But what kind of aborigines were they who wrote in the language so perfect in grammar, composition, poetry and meter that a scholar needs 12 years to master their grammar alone? What kind of aborigines were they who, thousands of years ago, formulated divisions of time, beginning with 1/10,000th of a second, up to the complete duration of universal time? What kind of aborigines were they who could describe, thousands of years ago, all the planets that modern scientists have only recently discovered? Where is the scientist today who can perfectly describe the process of conception taking place in the womb, as the Vedic so-called aborigines did thousands of years ago? How could these uncivilized aborigines categorize and enumerate in the Vedas all the different species of life, numbering 8,400,000? How is it that the Vedas, which are supposed to be the dubious writings of uncivilized aborigines, contain systematic information on subjects such as music, medicine, art, politics, architecture, warfare and psychology? How could uncivilized aborigines even know the arts of reading and writing, much less describe the atom and atomic energy? How could they give descriptions of the orbits of the planets, their size, their eclipses, and the size of the universe? And how could they describe the soul and the super soul, God? So in this way, we have so many theories and philosophies. Kali Yuga is filled with people who try to obscure the existence of any devotional philosophy, any hint pointing at the existence of God will be attempted to suppress. Ultimately, try to prove that ultimately it's all matter and nothing God is, no God is involved in it. So I'd like to conclude by saying there's one verse on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Where Lord Chaitanya, Kaviraj Goswami is saying, Sri Chaitanya Prabhu Vande Balo Piyad Anugrahat Tare Nana Matagrahat Vyaptam Siddhanta Sagaram. There are so many philosophies, so many ideologies in this world. It's an ocean of ideologies. And a person who is swimming in that ocean Only by Lord Chaitanya's mercy one can come out of such an ocean. Even a child can come out if he receives the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So by Prabhupada's mercy, Prabhupada would strongly condemn the scientific theories whenever he would get time. There was a series of morning walks with Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. So there he would occasionally, so what are the rascal scientists saying today? That's how we would introduce the morning walk. This pastime appears in the Leelamrita. He was having a conversation with one reporter, one scientist I think. He said, "I am a biologist." So when Prabhupada, "You are a biologist, poor frogs," he said. "Poor frogs?" So he said, "But this is for research and development." So Prabhupada said, "But you are killing them. If I ask your body, will you give?" So yes, yes, I'll give. So when he said that, everyone started laughing in the assembly. But he couldn't get that message. And this way the whole discussion ended. The point is how Prabhupada continuously, whenever he got an opportunity, he would expose the scientists' fallacies and their hypocrisy and try to prove how God is the ultimate principle, the controller of everything, and unless we accept God and surrender to Him, we cannot experience real happiness and joy. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments anyone has? Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.